This is Marathon Training Academy, episode 228.
Welcome to the Marathon Training Academy podcast, where we empower you to train smart and go the distance. I'm Trevor.
And I'm Angie.
In this episode, we interview Bart Yasso, Chief Running Officer at Runner's World Magazine and author of the new book, Race Everything, How to Conquer Any Race at Any Distance. And for the quick tip in this episode, Angie will answer a listener question about how to decrease pre-race anxiety. And to get more help meeting your running goals, you can learn about Academy membership when you visit marathontrainingacademy.com. So Angie, you just ran marathon number 50. At the Mount Desert Island Marathon in Maine, and we are going to, of course, be talking about that on our next episode and some lessons learned from 50 marathons. It sounds awesome to say that, you know, 50 marathons. So how are you feeling today?
Pretty good. Yeah, I was out for my first official run after the marathon about 5 days later. Been to the chiropractor. They're getting me all lined up. So yeah, all's good.
Well, let's talk about the MTA Virtual Half really quick. Registration for this event has exceeded our initial estimates, which is great. And we've already had to bump up our order of hats and medals. So thank you so much, everyone who has jumped into this event. If you're hearing this and you want to earn some bling and put another race, it's a virtual race, but it's still a race, on the calendar for yourself in November and challenge yourself. Just go to marathontrainingacademy.com/half and hopefully there'll be a spot left for you because we might sell this baby out. Well, now we'd like to get into a segment called Awesome People Doing Awesome Things because we like the word awesome so much.
Formerly known as the shoutouts.
So what do you got for us today there, Angie?
Lots of good stuff. We got this nice note from Melissa in the Academy. She says, "Hi, Angie and Trevor. It's now been a little over a week since the Chicago Marathon. It was my first marathon, and I crossed the finish line with a smile on my face and tears of joy in my eyes. It was hotter than I was hoping, but I was happy to finish with a time of exactly 4 hours and 25 minutes.
And 0 seconds.
That's right. But I crossed the start line with confidence that my training, both physical and mental, would carry me across the finish line. And I was right. The race was challenging in the perfect way. As Trevor talked about in the Munich recap, there was absolute magic in the misery. I appreciated the pain in the final miles and have a feeling that the challenge of the marathon distance will keep me coming back for more races in the coming years. I'd also like to pass along my sincere thanks to MTA coach Dominique. She has guided me through nearly 5 months of training leading up to the marathon, and I could never have reached this goal so seamlessly without her help. She kept me on track with my training and was truly a coaching chameleon. She pushed me when I needed it, held me back when I needed it, and instilled an unwavering sense of confidence in me as I progressed through my training plan. By the time I towed the start line in Chicago, I was certain that I would cross the finish line, and I think that level of confidence is a luxury that many first-time marathoners don't have. Thanks again for your support, and best of luck to everyone in the community who's tackling a challenge in the coming weeks."
Well, that is a great email. I mean, it illustrates just so many different things. Like, first of all, the importance of having confidence when you show up to a marathon. Just knowing that, you know, no matter what the marathon's going to throw at you, you've put in the training, you have what it takes, you're feeling good, you're mentally strong. And also, there's a good lesson in there about sort of readjusting expectations, because she mentioned that it was hotter than, you know, she would have liked. And we heard from a lot of people actually at this year's Chicago Marathon who complained about the heat. So it's quite possible Melissa would have finished even faster, you know, on a cooler day. But just knowing that, hey, the heat's going to slow you down and not getting too depressed about it, that's very wise as well.
Yeah, definitely.
And it also looks to me like a case study in what a coach can do for you, kind of holding you back sometimes, pushing you sometimes. Melissa described Dominique as a coaching chameleon. That's a new term I've heard.
Yeah, that's a really good way to describe it.
It's all about being adaptable. So great job, Melissa, on finishing your first marathon, and keep up the great work.
And this note comes from Mark. He says, "Dear Angie and Trevor, I'm a doctor in Rochester, New York, and I wanted to thank you for joining me during my morning commute. I finished 4 half marathons this year and recently completed my 4th full marathon at the Corning Wineglass Marathon. I was looking to break 4 hours, but 4:02 was what the day brought. I found myself hearing you guys telling me to stand tall and smile at mile 22 when my quad started to complain. Your podcast really keeps me going and inspired during the early morning training. I already signed up for your virtual half in November. Keep it going.
Well, thank you for the nice note, Mark. And thanks for signing up for our virtual half. And congrats on finishing your fourth full marathon. And Angie, that's one of your favorites, isn't it? Corning Wine Glass Marathon?
Yes. That was one of my favorite races.
In upstate New York.
Beautiful area. And this email comes from Sylvia. It says, hello, Angie and Trevor. My name is Sylvia from Slovakia. I'm currently studying in the Czech Republic and I'm a keen runner. I completed my first half marathon this April and started training for my first marathon in October. As the pressure of training started mounting, I came across your website and find it very inspiring. It made me crave the support your clients have from you on their journey to marathon or any different race. I love English, and so the podcasts that you guys do are perfect for my long runs. My first marathon was the Kosice Peace Marathon, the oldest in Europe, and I finished in 4 hours and 17 minutes. It felt great to accomplish something like this just because I wanted to. Now to the next adventure. May your vocals always be strong to keep the podcast flowing.
Well, thank you, Sylvia. So cool to hear from a listener from Slovakia. But you know what's interesting, Angie, is like right after we got this email, I saw that marathon in the news, the same marathon that Sylvia mentioned, the Kosice Peace Marathon. We're probably not saying it right. But apparently the winner of this year's event, his shorts came off and he was just like running with everything hanging out. Did you hear that?
Oh, that was the one. Yeah, there was a wardrobe malfunction.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, the shorts gaped alarmingly in the front.
I'm always afraid that's going to happen to me.
And yeah, I mean, he kept going and got a PR, but I'm sure a lot of people got an eyeful that maybe they weren't expecting.
You know those race ready shorts that I've been wearing for years?
Yes.
Like they've been ran in and washed so many times and taken so many different marathons. Someday I'm afraid they're just going to split open like right around mile 23 or something.
Well, maybe reading that news article is your sign to order a new pair.
So anyway, little side note there. Keep going there, Angie.
All right, this note comes from Anne Sophie in the Academy. She says, I finished the Amsterdam Marathon in 4 hours, 30 minutes with a 15-minute PR. I'm really proud of it as I'd been ill with a fever and cold leading up to it and was aqua jogging for 2 weeks due to pain in my foot. I'm going to break 4 hours next year. I think I could have done it if I hadn't been ill. I ran it with my husband as it was his first full marathon. He carried me through the middle where I really struggled, and I could return the favor during the last 10K when he was ready to give in. It was an awesome experience and cool to have done it together.
See, women have a higher pain tolerance. She had to carry him at the end. Well, congrats, Anne Sophie, on finishing the Amsterdam Marathon and earning that 15-minute PR. We had some other, you know, members and listeners at the Amsterdam Marathon this year. Judith, who is from Norway, we actually got to meet her last year at the Berlin Marathon. She got a PR in Amsterdam as well, right?
Yes, she did. She struggled with some cramping during the race, but she was still able to finish strong with a 5-minute personal best. And she posted, huge thanks to MTA coach Steve Walden, who has been a big support this training cycle. I never would have managed to collect myself in the midst of my struggles and finish strong without the solid training plan.
You know, it just illustrates again, like you never know what a marathon's going to throw at you. You know, hearing about the cramping that she dealt with definitely slowed her down, but you just deal with it and you keep going. You know, you push through, you analyze what's going on, figure out how bad it is. Think about, you know, all the training runs that you've done in which you've had to overcome unexpected things, and you just reach back into the resources, right?
That's right.
Well, congratulations, everyone out there, taking your running to the next level and experiencing this great world of ours through long distance running. We're so glad to be on this journey with you. We know you're going to enjoy this interview with the legend, the man, Bart Yasso. This was a special interview because Bart was one of the first guests we had on this show back when we started in 2010. Remember that?
I do. I especially remember the fact that we had technical difficulties.
You always bring this part up.
Well, I remember just being so nervous.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was so gracious and just a great person to talk to and interview despite our newness.
Like Skype kept like dropping our call. We had to keep calling back. But anyway, yeah. But what makes this interview special is that I was able to go to Emmaus, Pennsylvania to Runner's World headquarters and interview Bart in person in his office. So let me just set up the scene for you guys. Emmaus, Pennsylvania is a small town, but it's where Rodale is headquartered. Well, Rodale also has offices in New York City, but they have this huge campus in Emmaus, and it's just amazing to visit. There's, you know, 400 or so people that work there. And I was buzzed into the front lobby, and then they called Bart, and he came down. And interestingly, we were both wearing the same shoes, like same color, same everything.
Wow. So, you didn't plan that ahead of time?
We did not.
Yeah, people can check out our Instagram feed for that picture.
Yes, at Marathon Academy, or go to our blog. So Bart gave me a quick tour of the building. I saw the organic cafeteria. I saw the meditation room, the library. There's a room where a bunch of bicycles are hanging up where people have ridden their bikes to work. And of course, Rodale has more than one magazine that's being operated out of this campus. So the Runner's World floor, I think it was up on like level 3, their offices. And they have this, the best way to describe it is this concept room where there's this huge wall and every page of the magazine is hung up on the wall and they are just mapping out the layout. He says it's easier to do that than just looking at a screen. And again, to see a picture of that, go to our Instagram account or to the blog with this episode.
So what other magazines does Rodale do? I mean, I know that they publish books as well.
Yeah, Rodale is bigger and definitely more interesting as of a company than I imagined. They do Prevention Magazine, Men's Health, Women's Health, Bicycling, and of course Runner's World. But the company was founded by J.I. Rodale, and he was an early advocate of organically grown food. And this was back in the 40s, and most people just laughed at him for it. But he seemed to be like way ahead of his time, because now it's, you know, everyone would prefer to eat organic, right?
Right.
So he published Organic Gardening Magazine, and they also have an organic experimental farm.
Sounds like quite the operation.
So Bart has an autobiography called My Life on the Run, which was actually the first running book I ever read. This new book is called Race Everything. I'll just read you the author bio. Bart Yasso is chief running officer at Runner's World magazine and one of the most beloved figures in running. Unofficially called the mayor of running, Yasso is the public face of Runner's World at races in the United States and abroad. He's been with Runner's World since 1987 and has been instrumental in growing what was once a very small race sponsorship program to one that has linked the brand with thousands of races and millions of runners. So yeah, he's definitely one of the icons in the sport, and I'm sure like many of you listening to this have heard him speak or have met him. And if you have, you are probably unanimous with the rest of us by saying this is like one of the most personable, down-to-earth, friendly human beings that you'd ever meet.
That's right.
You can tell he's in a lot of pain. I mean, he contracted Lyme's disease. He talks about this a little bit in this new book. Of course, we have really bad Lyme's occurrences here in Pennsylvania because of tick bites. So Bart got Lyme's, I think, for the first time in 1990, and it's flared up over the years, sometimes making it impossible to run. And in fact, like he came down the stairs to greet me. One of the first things I noticed is just how difficult it looks like, you know, it is for him to move and to walk, sort of arthritic.
Really affected his joints.
Yeah, definitely. But I mean, he's still just the sweetest guy. Just has this overwhelming joy about him. So much fun to go there and to interview him in person. Here is my conversation with Bart Yasso. All right, folks, I am here in person with the man, Bart Yasso, in his office. Bart, so good to be with you. It's an honor to interview you.
Hey, thank you, Trevor. Thanks for coming to the Runner's World headquarters in Eastern Pennsylvania and in my office before I close it down for retirement. But yeah, thanks for coming in.
Your new book is called Race Everything, and the subtitle is How to Conquer Any Race at Any Distance in Any Environment and Have Fun Doing It.
That's basically what I've been doing in my 30 years at Runner's World, so I'm trying to pass on the knowledge and, you know, help people out and challenge people to do different distances and take their running to a next level is what I call it.
Give us an idea of just, like, how much you traveled during your 30 years here at Runner's World.
Yeah, Trevor, one of the first things I showed you was a pile of credentials in my office.
Yep.
There's, like, 800-some credentials in
that pile. Why do you keep those?
You know, I don't know. I don't think I started keeping them, but at some point I just hung a couple up on something in my office, and then it just kept going and going and going and going.
I think they should just make this office a museum.
Yeah.
And not let anybody else move into it after you're gone.
I like that, Trevor.
Just preserve it.
But yeah, I go to approximately 45 to 50 races a year, and have been doing it for past 30 years at Runner's World, so it's been a joy.
When I think about, like, the ideal book that you could have written, I couldn't have thought of a better concept than this. Because you've been to so many races, you've personally run, you know, over 1,000 races, and we're talking from 5Ks all the way to just brutal ultramarathons. So I'm really excited about, you know, diving into some of this stuff and how one can just be better prepared for a race.
Sure.
But before we get into that, I just want to start with a story. And one of my favorite stories, in fact, the first running book I ever read was your first book, My Life on the Run.
My Life on the Run, yeah.
And there's so many great stories and vignettes from that book. But for those that haven't read the book or don't know a lot about your story, how did you get the nickname Badwater Bart?
Yeah, one of my early work assignments at Runner's World back in the 80s was to do the Badwater 146-miler. It's now a 135-mile race, but back in the 80s it was 146 miles in Death Valley. In July, finish line on top of Mount Whitney, 14,496 feet, which is the highest mountain in the contiguous 48 states. And then you run through these 120-degree temperatures in Death Valley. And you just run 146 miles. And, you know, I was an experienced marathoner at the time. But, you know, everyone in the staff of Runner's World, they were convinced that someone from Runner's World had to do this race.
Yeah.
And everyone voted for me. And I was like, wow. And
are you easily talked into things?
I guess I am, but I was like, wow, this is kind of crazy because I wasn't an ultra guy at the time, but I always felt I wanted to do some ultras. So, but it's not the way to start your ultra career. Go right to Badwater and run 146 miles.
Man,
but
that's nuts.
Since it was a work assignment, you know, I did it, and thank God I did it because after that, people at Runner's World said, okay, we'll send this guy anywhere. He'll do anything we ask him to do. We just send him all over the world, and we're good. So, you know, I never realized it would open up so many doors for me. So thank God I did take on the challenge. But, yeah, Badwater is pretty serious, 146-mile race in July in Death Valley.
And what's interesting is, you know, that race has become more and more famous, but back when you did it, not a whole lot of people doing it.
That was the whole premise of the story. Here's this tough, what they call the toughest race in America, and literally nobody knew about it. Because I was in a room with 20-some people that work at Runner's World magazine, and nobody knew about the race.
Wow.
So that the whole premise of the story was, okay, we're going to make this race famous. Yeah. We're going to let everyone know what the toughest race in America is like. And so to do that, someone on staff has to go out and run it.
And the year that you ran it, there was like maybe eight or nine.
I think there were seven of us that started the race. It was pretty small potatoes, and it's so interesting to go to start of a race with six other runners, and you can introduce yourself and all shake hands, and then, you know, they say go. It's a little different than the big races.
So did the race live up to the billing of being the hardest foot race?
Oh, there's no doubt about it. The extreme temperatures and the hills in that race. I mean, 46 miles, you hit Towns Pass, 17 miles long, and then you got a killer 10-mile downhill, which is brutal, and then some more uphills, and then, you know, like the last, and on that old course that they used back in the 80s, the last 27 miles of the race are uphill.
Yeah.
Every inch of the way.
Mm.
So when people say, oh, my God, they complain about, like, a hill in the Runner's World Half Marathon, I'm like, you're talking to the wrong guy.
Yeah.
You know, complain to one of your other running buddies. I'm not going to hear it.
Do you remember how hot it was that year?
It was hot. It was everything that they said it would be. You know, we had all these temperature gauges and all this kind of stuff, and it was the temperature gauge in the shade, nothing to do with the sun, was registering. You know, in the afternoons, it was 122, 123 degrees. And that was, you know, pre-internet, so you couldn't just log on to weather.com. But, you know, when you actually got a newspaper and looked at the weather, that was the projected forecast. So it was warm and toasty.
So would you say that of all the races you've done, that was the hardest?
That by far was the hardest. You know, lucky for me, I was young and fit at the time, and I was able to do it. I've done a couple of races where I've had a lot of physical problems with Lyme disease and stuff, and it was harder to do some other races. But just, you know, when healthy and ready to go, that was by far the most challenging race I've ever done.
In that chapter of your first book, My Life on the Run, you talk about this guy who had skis, and he was going to...
Adrian,
He's going to try... What was his name?
Adrian Crane, real adventure guy, real amazing person.
He was going to try to ski across the salt flats.
He did ski across some salt flats because the ground breaks and... But he cut the course to do that. There was all this craziness, like he claimed the race was from the lowest point to the highest point in the contiguous 48 states, so he was just going to cut across the salt flat and ski across in the middle of the night. Honestly, what I thought he was doing was harder than being out running on the roads, to be honest, because he was by himself and in the darkness of Death Valley. And but he was a very real adventurous, and orienteering was his specialty. So he knew what he was doing. I would have gotten lost out there, I guarantee you.
Just to show everyone how small the world is, and I feel like I'm connected to this story because my dad used to own a sporting goods store in Modesto, California.
Oh, my God, Modesto, yeah.
Yeah, and I think High Tech was based in Modesto.
High Tech was based in Modesto.
And so he remembers when Adrian came into the store asking for some skis and explaining this crazy scheme. And my dad just gave him just an old pair of cross-country skis.
Yeah, and that's what he had because it's amazing. It was called the High Tech Badwater 146. High Tech was the sponsor. The race director, Dave Pompa, worked at High Tech. Also a very famous runner by the name Chalane Flanagan's father, Steve Flanagan, also worked at High Tech, and he was out there during the race. He was part of the crew. So
You mentioned that in this new book.
I'll never forget running with Chalane's father. And Steve Flanagan was a very good runner in his day.
Yeah.
But he didn't hit the levels that his daughter did. His daughter just, won the best female runner we have in America. But it's interesting, that connection. And I posted a picture of the Badwater shirt from 1989. And Chalane said she wore it all the time in high school. Because I guess there were some extra shirts that her dad had. And she said it was her favorite shirt, the colors on it and stuff.
Yeah.
And when I saw that, she posted that comment on Instagram. That was awesome. Just awesome to read.
Wow.
Small world.
It is. Let's talk about some of the great races here in the States. Let's start with 5Ks. Like, what's some of the most popular 5Ks? And I guess let's do 10Ks while we're at it.
Sure. Yeah, so what I do say in the book, and I say this all the time in person, it is hard to say this is the best race
because
there are so many good races. So it kind of like, I had to nitpick and think, what was a cool experience for me?
Yeah.
And, I don't want to down any other races because there are so many great races at every distance. But 5K, that Carlsbad 5000, which is Carlsbad, California, just north of San Diego. I've done that race a couple times. It is so much fun. It's crazy. And what I love that I love the way they do the different heats. So us 40-plus-year-old guys, back when I was doing the race, we started at 7 a.m. and then women over 40 started at 8 a.m. So if you had a spouse or a friend there, you could actually watch other people do their heat. And
that's great.
Man, they were just the fastest people in age groups. I'll never forget, one time I thought, okay, I'm running pretty well. I go through that mile in like 5 minutes and 10 seconds. I thought, okay, I feel good. And then, you had a bib on your back that had your age group. And I'm like, damn, this guy in front of me is in the 60 to 64 age group. And I was in my 40s at the time. I thought, no way this dude is flying. And that's just Carlsbad. There were just always these amazing age groupers. And of course, they set the world record on that course many times. So not only your age groupers, but then what happens is all the age group waves go off over a 3-4 hour period. Then at about 11:30 in the morning, there's literally 12,000, 13,000 runners who are already completed the race. And now we watch the 30-plus elite runners, 15 men, 15 women, the best in the world, go out and duke it out. And just to see that, because in most races, we see the elite runners right at the start, but when the gun goes off, we see them run away from us and disappear. But the way that format is, you can actually physically be out there cheering for them. And I always say it's like the fittest crowd at a race, running around to see the best in the world finish their race and try to set world records, which has happened many times on that course. So,
is it the same company that does the Big Sur Marathon?
No, the people that put on Carlsbad 5000 are the people that put on Rock and Roll races.
Oh, the competitor group.
Yep.
Okay.
Competitor group. The Carlsbad 5000 is one of their races, and it's just a classic course and a classic race. And then 10K, races like Peachtree here are just unbelievable. But the one I highlighted was Monument Avenue 10K in Richmond, Virginia, which is very similar to Carlsbad, where they do heats. They do about 30 heats. You have to qualify for your heat. So what happens is So there's 30,000 people in the race, but you're just running in a heat with about 1,000 runners. And those 1,000 runners in your heat have proven that they run a specific time. So whether that's 40 minutes for a 10K or 60 minutes, whatever it is. So you end up running with about 1,000 runners of your equal ability. And so it's like a mini race within this big race. And yeah, it's a beautiful course and perfect time of the year, the end of March, beginning of April, kind of the rites of spring. And so that's why I highlighted Monument Avenue 10K as my fave 10K race. But, you know, again, it is really hard to choose because there are great races out there.
Oh, for sure. So let's talk about half marathons. Any tips you could share about how to effectively race a half marathon, getting ready for race day?
Yeah, I think the half marathon, well, of course, it's been a growing distance for quite a while. But I think it's that, I love the half marathon.
I do too.
It's long enough to really challenge you,
yep,
but short enough that you're not laid up for a couple weeks, you know, if you run it all out. And the marathon distance, as you know, can beat you up pretty badly and,
yep,
and you know, have you on a two-week, three-week recovery versus the half is not as bad. But it is a challenging distance. And, you know, when I first started running, it wasn't, the half marathon wasn't popular.
Hmm.
Everyone did 10, you know, all the races were 10Ks. We didn't even have any 5K races. They were all 10K races, 10-mile. And then these half marathons started popping up. And originally, like the one in Indianapolis, it wasn't called a half marathon. It was called the
Mini.
Mini. And the one in Philadelphia, which is the one I highlighted, was called the Philadelphia Distance Run because
yeah,
no one figured out to coin the phrase half marathon. But once they did, then those, that distance, 13.1, really took off. And, you know, I love it. And, of course, we have Runner's World Half Marathon. And I just think it's really a gateway to a lot of people to be part of the endurance world and not be intimidated by the marathon. Do that half marathon, and then they can figure out, okay, I really want to be a marathoner, but I'm going to do these couple half marathons. It's a great jumping point. And but I'm telling you, if you, I always tell people I coach, you want to be a good marathoner, you run well at the half marathon first, and then that'll show you how well you can do in the marathon. It's really a, you got to prove it to yourself that you can sustain a set pace for a half marathon and then kind of adjust it and do that ultimate marathon goal that you have.
Sometimes I think people find that their times in a half don't necessarily translate to a full.
Right.
So what's been your experience with seeing, you know?
Yeah, so I think that, you know, I always hear this formula, you know, double your half marathon and add about 12 minutes somewhere
okay,
in there, and that really works for a lot of people. And,
okay.
You know, but it depends on how much mileage you're doing and how many long runs you like. You know, if you're more experienced in the sport, if you're new to the sport and just starting in and out, it would be more like 20 to 25 minutes. But as you get better and more experienced and really learn how to race these distances, you'll get that down to like 12 minutes.
So, do you prefer training according to pace or according to heart rate or some other?
You know, I'm a big fan of listening to your body,
yeah,
and going off how you feel. That's why I never run with music. I want to know what my body's telling me. I'm a music guy. I love music, but not when I'm running. I really listen to my heart, listen to my breathing rhythm, and I get into the outdoors. I do majority of my running on trails, and I want to experience what I'm hearing,
yeah,
and seeing out there. I don't want to be plugged in the music. So, but I am really, I'd love to teach running like on feel. Now there's days I've always been like, this is the day you're going to do a fast quality workout and then you're going to go easy for a couple days. And even those days when, you know, there's a fast quality workout, I want you to go off of how you feel. Some days, I always say some days it feels like you got wings on your shoes and you just fly and it's effortless and you can just increase the pace as you're going along.
Yeah.
And then some days you think like, okay, my running buddies have put Velcro on the bottom of my shoes. Like I feel like I'm sticking to the ground and I don't have any lift. And, you know, it's just one of those days. And then if you go off a feel, you tend to really be smart about your training. And those days where you just don't have it, you don't have it, you don't go out there and really push. Turn it into an easy day and save that quality workout for another day when you feel a lot better. And I don't know why some days are like that, whether it's, you know, you get a good night's sleep, or you're well, you know, well rested, or just, you know, no stress, whatever it is, you know, you got to figure it out and take notes to figure out why, wow, everything I did leading up to that worked and I just felt great, and everything I did leading up to that and I didn't feel great, kind of look at what worked and what didn't work kind of thing.
You mentioned that you love music. You seem like a classic rock guy, Bart.
Oh, yeah. Jimi Hendrix. Yeah, I mean, I grew up in the 60s. So.
They were playing the Doors down in the cafeteria.
Yeah, you know, I am so jealous of Ambi Burfoot, our editor at Runner's World, for many, many years. Ambi has retired, but Ambi Burfoot, you know, a gentleman that worked at Runner's World for 30-plus years.
And a mentor to you, Tony.
And mentor to me on every front, as a person, as a writer, as a runner. But Ambi Burfoot, you know, that two iconic things. He won the Boston Marathon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who would not want to have that on their resume?
Oh, man.
We all do. And it's not going to happen. But but Ambi Burfoot also went to Woodstock.
Oh.
So I always would kid with him.
The bragging rights.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm more jealous that you went to Woodstock than winning the Boston Marathon. I always kidded around with him about that because I was 14 when Woodstock happened, and I was not there. But Ambi's a little bit older than I am, and he was at Woodstock. So
wow.
If you can think of something, I always kid around with Ambi. He's the only person on the planet, and I checked with all the other Boston Marathon winners. He's the only person on the planet that has won the Boston Marathon and went to Woodstock.
There needs to be a book about that.
Ambi thinks, he doesn't think it's no big deal. I know it's a big deal, trust me. And those were, you know, he won Boston in 68, so they were really close together, which is kind of cool. But he doesn't think it's cool. I personally think it's pretty cool.
I think it's awesome. So let's go back to what you were saying about how some days you just, you feel like junk. Other days you feel good and like you can run, you know, all out. Have you done some half marathons where you showed up to the starting line and you just completely felt like crap? And how'd you deal with it?
Yeah, I have. I mean, you really just, right from the beginning, you go out and you go, oh, my God, what is going on? Like, I'm in pretty good shape, but I just cannot get it going. And those are days you, if you know that early on, you kind of readjust your goal and just get to that finish line and get there as fast as you can, you know, still run a decent race.
So maybe go down to, like, your B goal or your C goal.
Yeah. And if you go down to your B goal and C goal early in the race, it's pretty attainable. It's when you try to make those adjustments when you're in over your head and didn't make them early enough that it makes it a lot tougher.
Yeah.
But I like having those A, B, and C goals in that race so you can – but if you make the adjustment early and, you know, just – if there's one thing I could do if I – all over again, if I could go back 40 years, I would just say, okay, those days where you just don't have it and it's just brutal, like just – don't worry about it. Just get to the finish. Be happy you're able to do this. And there's another race a couple weeks away. But I always had that mindset early on. You just ran on the edge of death no matter how you feel. Mm. And then you really struggle because what happens with those really tough races, it really takes its toll. And you miss a couple weeks of training. And, you know, sometimes it just isn't worth it to lose all that training. If you just kind of – if I readjust it to that – B goal early on, I would not have felt so bad. But you know, you live and learn.
You're older and wiser now, Bart. You wouldn't do that.
Yes, anymore. You know, when I wrote Race Everything and with Aaron Strout, my great editor, that was one of the things I kept saying to myself when I'd come in the office and fire up my computer, I'm ready to start writing. I'd say, okay, this is young Bart, 40 years ago, thought he knew it all because he was young and everyone young and you know it all. And then here's old Bart in his 60s. He actually knows a little bit more than that young Bart. So it's like it was always old Bart talking to young Bart. Like, here's what I learned over these 40 years. And I do know a little bit more after 40 years of doing this stuff.
Now, young Bart was fast. I mean, you were clocking sub-3-hour marathons. I forget what your PR was, like a 240.
Yeah, 240, Yeah, I mean, fast is relative, you know. But I actually liked what I did in my 40s better than what I did in my 20s and 30s. I remember running 2:41 when I was in my 40s, like mid-40s.
And yeah,
I remember running 1:14 for a half marathon when I was in my 40s. So I just think at that point in my career, I really knew what I was doing, and I was able to run what I feel are better times for my ability than when I was in my 20s and 30s. And we're, young enough to do that, but then I was just this, you know, I wanted to do it all, you know. And you can't do it all. You got to really, you know, pick a few things that you really want to accomplish. And going back, I wouldn't change a thing, but I learned a lot. I don't know why I thought I knew it all, but, you know, I guess it was just being in your 20s. You know, I knew I never said I knew it all about running, but you just had that know-it-all mentality, and I didn't know it all.
Have you ever DNF'd a race?
Yes. You know, I just had to stop at the halfway point in Chicago just 10 days ago or whatever it was.
Mm.
Yeah, I was really struggling. I was down to, I couldn't even walk anymore, so I was, I thought, you know, I was convinced I could kind of walk, run to the finish, and then it got to where I was just walking, and then it got to where I was struggling to walk, and I said, this is crazy. And, you know, the only time you DNF is when it really, you have that feeling that you're going to do permanent damage.
Sure.
Or really hurt yourself long term. And then to me, DNF is a smart thing to do every once in a while. And the three that I had that I remember were, you know, I was going to do permanent damage, so it's not worth it.
That's when DNF stands for Did Nothing Foolish, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I haven't run a step since I stopped in Chicago. I just, I really need my body to heal. I contracted another Lyme disease infection this past summer. I had a tick bite under my armpit, and, you know, but eventually they diagnosed it. My blood work was pretty crazy, but I got on the antibiotics and felt better, and did a couple of half marathons, and thought, okay, I'm back. I can do this stuff. And then, man, Chicago, my legs just, the minute I start, that literally the first two steps I took, I said, oh my God, this is going to be a long day. I am in pain already, and we just started, and I started really, really slowly. And it just got worse and worse. I was sitting on the side of the road. I had to, you know, just get off my feet because of the swelling in my legs and stuff. It just was not a good day. But taking a break from running, and we'll see. Hopefully I can get back at it one of these days and get my blood work done again and see where my levels are on the Lyme disease.
You know, psychologically, what does that do? What have you seen, you know, when people have to drop out of a race, and how do they kind of go on from there?
You know, it's no fun, I can tell you that, because, you know, when I was doing, I did a couple seminars in Chicago at the Expo Friday and Saturday, and, you know, I told everyone I was running, and, you know, there were some people that asked me about my Lyme disease and stuff, and I told them, I said, look, if at this point in all these years, the joy of running has outweighed the pain that I'm in from the Lyme disease. So as long as the joy is higher than the pain, I'm going to keep running. And I thought of those words when I was out there trying to run in Chicago, and I said, I can honestly look in the mirror and say to myself, the pain is way outweighing the joy today. And that's when I realized I had to stop. So I just tried to get to halfway, and then I pulled out of the race. And but that's why, you know, I tell people it's not the end of the world. They have these races, and, you know, it can be a really smart thing to do to stop in a race, you know, as I said, if you're going to hurt yourself. But psychologically, it's no fun. I mean, the other thing I would say to what I did say in my seminar is you have to finish, you know, if you're not in, like, pain that you feel is going to hurt yourself permanently. If you're just having a rough day, I'm all about just getting to the finish. And, you know, I know everyone's mad. Their time is so much slower than they anticipated. But that's the price you pay if you stay in this sport a long time and do a lot of races. So if there's no shame.
You never know what a marathon can throw at you.
Yes. The other thing I was telling people in my seminars in Chicago is I learned a valuable lesson from Sarah Reinertsen, who's the first woman to do the Hawaii Ironman with a prosthetic leg.
Okay.
And Sarah's a very good friend of mine. We're at this half marathon, and Sarah just, she had a very rough day, but I was at that finish line waiting for her. And when she came in, she looked me right in the eye and said, never take a finish line for granted.
Wow.
And, man, those words stuck in my head, because she was right. I mean, she could have quit. She could have stopped. She could have just said, I don't need to do this anymore. She was really having a rough day and probably ran a half hour slower than what she thought she would do. But she got to that finish line, And it's not only the words that she said, it's the way she looked at me in the eye and said that. I'm like, wow. That was, I'm going to guess, 15 years ago, and I remember it like it was yesterday. And those words go through my head every once in a while.
I think I'm going to remember that, too. I love that. Yeah. Never take a finish line for granted.
Never take a finish line for granted. It's a very sacred place and a place of honor. Don't always worry about the numbers on the clock. Sometimes it doesn't work out, but finishing is a good thing.
So what's helpful in the book is you have not only training plans, but also tips about how to effectively race some of the most popular marathons, half marathons. We have New York City Marathon coming up next month. Do you have any tips you can share for people about how to race New York City?
Yeah, I always say go back to the old days, because the first time I ran New York City, my good friend Cliff Held, his wife dropped us off at the start about 10 minutes before the start.
Oh, that'd be so
and we
nice.
Jumped out of the car. The bridge wasn't even closed to traffic.
Wow.
It was so much different than today. And as you know, now everyone gets on a bus at 5 in the morning or 5:30 in the morning or something like that.
Sit out there and shiver for 4 hours.
But the thing about New York, I mean, the moniker they use, a race like no other, is really true. I mean, it is as close to an Olympic experience as an average person, average runner will ever experience. Mm. The Olympic Summer Games have about 130 countries represented. New York City Marathon usually has about 140 countries represented. So, I mean, it is just a melting pot of the world.
Countries you never even heard of are there.
Yes, you're right. And there, it is a melting pot of the world. The diversity is just beautiful. And, of course, the diversity in New York City is beautiful. And that's what I love about that race. But there are some tips. Just remember how early you're going to be out there. And, you know, I have my breakfast when I get out there. Or I eat it on the bus ride out, because it's so many. You know, you got to use that timeline that you normally used to. But a lot of times you're doing a race, you just come out of the hotel and head over to the start. But New York's a little different, those point-to-point courses. Very similar to running Boston, where you got to get on a bus
in the morning. You should at least get a limousine ride out there.
Oh, yeah, no limousines for me. I like being with the masses, man. I like being with everybody. But, yeah, New York is really about staying warm till it starts, surviving when you're out there at the starting line at Staten Island. And if you can do that, Fort Wadsworth is where everything gets housed early on. If you can start warm, then you tend to have a good race. And don't blow it. There's three spots in the New York City Marathon where you can ruin your race. The first mile is all uphill. The second mile is all downhill. You got to be real smart in those first 2 miles.
Yeah.
And then at mile 16, just a little bit past mile 16, you come on the First Avenue. And I would say the prettiest part of New York City Marathon is 14 and a half to 16, because you're up on the 59th Street Bridge looking at the skyline of New York City, and it's just beautiful. It's so quiet up there. You cannot believe you're in a big city. There's no spectators allowed on the bridge. There's no cars. It's peaceful and quiet. You actually hear footsteps and the breathing of the other runners. That's all you hear.
Wow.
And you're like, wow, this is just, and this beautiful scene. But then you come off the 59th Street Bridge right after 16 miles, and a million people are waiting for you screaming. I mean, it's like...
That's great.
It's insane. And what happens is everyone picks up the pace.
Because of all the energy from the crowds.
Yeah. And, you know, everyone told me, don't pick it up at 16. The crowds will go crazy. Don't pick it up. And I didn't think I picked it up, but my watch showed that I picked it up. You know, because what happens is you're just running with this group or next to this runner. And so, man, I'm next to this runner for the last 5 miles. We're still going the same pace, but everybody picks it up. So that's where you got to stay within your zone and not get carried away, because First Avenue is slight uphill and you still have 10 miles to go. It's still too early to pick it up. But, yeah, but then the finish in New York, oh, my God, it's incredible. And then the other tip I always tell people, after you finish, it's an arduous task to get back to your hotel and to find loved ones. I mean, they do a great job with the organization of it. But there's just so many people in New York City. And it's not like they can't take the million of people that already live there and have them disappear. So, I mean, you just have the bustle of a regular day in New York City. And then throw 55,000 runners and another 400,000 spectators all in that finish area. It's it's amazing. But somehow you get find your family and get back to the hotel. It all works out. But
so there might be 4 or 5 more miles of walking.
Yeah, you really need to have a plan. And of course, if you have a cell phone, it can be a world of difference and help you out tremendously.
So at the time of this recording, you guys are pretty busy here because next weekend is the Runner's World Half Marathon.
Yeah, you got it. Our own race, the Runner's World Half Marathon. We do a 5K, 10K, half marathon, dog run, kids run, bunch of seminars. You know, it's a fun weekend.
It's a festival.
We call it a running festival. It is just goes on. We do a trail run. It goes on for 3 days. It's a lot of fun.
Are you the evil genius behind this event?
Yes. I mean, I designed those courses, and everyone beats me up because there's hills on all the courses.
Welcome to Pennsylvania.
Yeah. And I always say, you know, I didn't create the hills in Pennsylvania or Bethlehem. They are much older than I am.
You have to talk to God about that.
Yeah. But, you know, I designed courses where you actually get to take in the city of Bethlehem. I don't want people just to run the flat road back and forth or, you know.
Yep.
You get a tour of Bethlehem, the historic part, the cool neighborhoods, the Monocacy watershed, you know. You really get what Bethlehem's all about. And then we use this venue where we start and finish, which used to be the Bethlehem Steel. And people always say to me that never been to Bethlehem or never been to our race, like, why do you have a race in an abandoned steel company? And I go, when you get here, you'll understand. I mean, Bethlehem Steel, it's the start of the Industrial Revolution. You know, built the Empire State Building, the Golden Gate Bridge. I mean, it's amazing. Mm. And when you see these old blast furnaces and old historic sites that are still there, it really brings home how this country was built and where it all started. So it's... I never had anyone say why we use that venue when they come to our race. When they come to our race, they say, this is the coolest venue ever.
It's a very dramatic backdrop, and it's kind of like a scene from a Batman movie,
think. Yeah, yeah. All those what we call the sleeping giants, those blast furnaces that have been shut off for years. But, you know, the Smithsonian really wants them to be restored and to be part of history, because they are part of history. They really, like I say, they created this country, and... You know, World War I and World War II, the amount of stuff they were producing that was used in World War I and World War II, whether it was ammunition or tank, you know, all that stuff came out of, a lot of it came out of Bethlehem. So it really played a role in many ways in our history of our country.
I always love it when races can incorporate the history of the area and what the area is known for.
Yeah, and Bethlehem's our backyard. To Runner's World headquarters, and
that's where you grew up,
and that's my hometown. Yeah, I always we stand on those blast furnaces. You know, the three things I think of: my father and my two grandfathers, and between the three of them, they worked 130 years in those furnaces.
Wow!
So yeah, it's a part of my family history is involved with the Bethlehem Steel. So it's it's an emotional weekend for me to take it all in and showcase my home. City, and Bethlehem's a beautiful place.
So you're retiring this year after 30 years.
Yes.
And you've met millions and millions of runners. You're probably the most loved running figure.
I hear that a lot. That's a cool thing to hear.
Anything that you like to say to the running community?
Yeah, you know, I owe so much to the running community, and that's why it is hard to retire, and I don't know if I'll completely, you know, I am going to retire from Runner's World at the end of the year. But
People might still see you.
Yeah, I'm going to stay connected somehow to the running community, just on a smaller scale than what I have been doing the past 30-plus years. But, you know, the running community is such a powerful unit as a whole. Mm. You know, I owe so much to the community for what they've done for me personally, but what they've done for all over the world to get people into our sport. I always say, as a chief running officer at Runner's World, I come into my office every day and I say, okay, one of the things I have to do besides all the other stuff on my agenda is I got to get someone today, whether it's one person or 10 people or a group, I got to convince them that they can be a runner. Mm. And, you know, I reach out to these groups and, you know, I try to convince them that they could be a runner. I'm willing to go meet up with them and, you know, give them some tips and get them going. But I always say, once I get these people to run, whether it's 1 minute of running, you know, which leads to 10 minutes of running, whatever it is, I got to get them to commit to going to a run at a running store or part of a running club or to go to a local race.
Right.
Once that happens, the running community takes over, and I don't need to do a thing.
Yeah.
Because the running community is so infectious, and they get people motivated. When they find out someone's new to running, there's 10 people willing to help that person, to help them in training and tell them where to do their long runs and hook up with this group. And, you know, it's so cool to experience. And that's what goes on in the running community. It's a powerful community. And I always say there's a part of the book early on, and I thought of this every day when I came into my office to work on Race Everything. When the gun goes off, you know, say there's 6,000 people in the race. When the gun goes off, all 6,000 people follow the same path to the finish line.
Mm-hmm.
But there are 6,000 different paths to get to the starting line. Yeah. Everyone has a story. Everyone has a journey. You're not just born, you know, this person born's a runner and going to run a marathon. Like, there is no such thing. Like, somehow, some way, this idea came that you want to be a runner, and then you start doing races, and then you go from the 5K to the marathon, maybe an ultra, whatever it is. But there's this journey that we follow. And, you know, I want people to share their journey because, you know, I meet so many people with just inspiring, amazing stories, and they don't think their life is a story. And I'm like, your life's a story. And they, you know, it's really fun for me to kind of get them to talk about it. And then I come back and pitch it as a story idea. And sometimes they end up in Runner's World. They may end up in the magazine, on the website, or both. But it's really, that's what the running community is all about. You know, making change on a global level, inspiring other people. You know, some people don't realize they're inspiring. Like, just going out and putting on that bib number, somebody sees you, whether it's a neighbor, a coworker, something does it. And that's what you got to think about. And
if you run half marathons or marathons, you're almost looked at as being superhuman.
Yes. Yeah. And people don't think that. They just think, oh, you know, I finish towards the back, or I finish in the middle of the pack. It doesn't matter where you finish. You're a runner, number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, you're committed to this. You're out there doing it. You're pinning on the bib number and going out. And that's what it's all about. And trust me, you're inspiring people. You know, the cover of the book, Race Everything, is my office door.
Oh, yes, and that's right.
Yeah. So, you know what? I have all these bib numbers on my office, and I never told anyone why I did that until this past weekend in Chicago. So I put all these bib numbers on my door just so I could change and go out for a run right in my office. So I keep running stuff in this one drawer in my office. And when I first got this office, you know, they got these glass windows everywhere. And we do have a nice locker room and shower downstairs, but I like to just change into running stuff and head out and get my run when I got a break. So, you know, I just took a bunch of bib numbers from home. A lot of them are right here. I put them all over my office door so nobody could see in. And then when I would get a break to go run, I just quick change and head out the door. And doing shakeout runs with people and stuff, it's just been amazing. You know, I had these dreams when I would do long runs in the 70s and early 80s that wouldn't it be cool to get a job where I could get paid to go around the world and do races? You know, it was just a joke of a dream, just a pipe dream, literally. Go through my head as I was out there, mile 18 of a 23-mile run or whatever. But that dream came true, and if it happened to me, it can happen to anyone. So my tagline, never limit where running could take you, I mean that physically, geographically, emotionally, spiritually. Just use this sport to your advantage.
It's so true, folks. And I've seen running take me some amazing places, too. And I remember hearing you, the first time we interviewed you, our podcast is very new, it was 2010.
Yep.
And you said that same principle, never limit where running can take you.
Yeah, and I stick to it, man. It's, you know, like these people right here, it was at Shamrock Marathon, and I asked these runners to sign my bib because everyone asked me to sign their bib. And I got this cool bib number one, and I thought, I'm going to get a bunch of runners to sign it. So I can't wait till these people actually see this book and see their name on the cover of my book. I can't wait. But, yeah, these people, they would never know that somehow when they were signing that bib, they're going to end up on a cover of a book. But it happens.
So, folks, definitely go out and get Race Everything by Bart Yasso. And you'll, if you're not going to get the book, at least now you have to look at the cover, right? You have to see that.
Yeah,
But I recommend getting it. It's a great read. It's a fun read, too, because you incorporate a lot of stories into it. So not only are you talking about how to train for these various distances, but you have little vignettes of races that you've been to and experiences, and also how you got into running, your life story. Like you said, everyone's got their own journey to it, and everyone's journey is interesting.
I had a million failures before I ever hit something successful, you know. And that's how my life on the run tells a story. Like, I was not this runner, and, you know, I the one thing I always say is I wish I could have taken a selfie in 1976 when I went for that first run, because people wouldn't believe it's me.
The beard, you know, and the
beard
hair.
Beard and the hair, and Budweiser T-shirt and cut-off jeans and tube socks up to my knees and pair of kids. But we all start somewhere.
That's right.
And you just never know what happens. But you got to start, and that's the key. Once you start, you see where the paths will take you.
Well, Bart, we appreciate you, man.
Oh, Trevor, thank you so much. Keep doing a great job with Marathon Training Academy, and I appreciate what you do for the running community, because this is very important to share the love and share what it's all about, and you've had some fantastic guests over the years, so keep up the good work.
Well, thanks for all the inspiration, Bart. We will definitely miss you, and hopefully not miss you too much, because we'll be seeing you hopefully at various races, huh?
Yeah, I'm going to go to a few races. There's no doubt about it. I'm going to cut back a lot, but I'll stay connected somehow.
Perfect. Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Bart Yasso. He had to hurry off to a photo shoot because they're doing a special, I think, just farewell story about him. But I got to spend a little more time at Runner's World headquarters and talk with Brian, who's on the podcasting team there, about what's going on with the different Runner's World podcasts. So, yeah, it was fun. If you guys want to see pictures, I took a few photos when I was there. You definitely check them out on our blog. And, of course, we'll have links to Bart's book, Race Everything. Well, before we get into this episode's quick tip, we'd like to thank Thrive Market for sponsoring this episode.
That's right. Thrive Market is one of our favorite online stores because they sell all the top organic and health products at 25 to 50% off, and they get shipped straight to your door, which is the best part. And you can find thousands of specialty products that you won't find at most local health stores, again, at those wholesale costs. And Thrive Market makes it super easy to shop because with one click, you can sort out the entire catalog by categories, things like non-GMO, organic, vegan, gluten-free, paleo, sustainably farmed. Whatever your dietary interests are, you can probably find a category for you at Thrive Market.
Bart is a vegetarian. I'm sitting in his office and I see these packs of rice noodles. And I ask him, what are you going to do after you retire? And he says this and that. He's sort of joking around. He says, maybe I'll just sit around and eat rice noodles. And I said, that doesn't sound like a good retirement to me. The cool thing about Thrive Market is if you are a vegan or vegetarian, you could just search those products and not see anything else other than what's in your particular interest.
And another thing I love about Thrive Market is that the cost is so affordable. They cut out the middlemen and they work directly with brands, so they pass on these savings directly to their members. You can get $20 off your first three purchases, so a total of $60 of free organic groceries plus free shipping when you use the link thrivemarket.com/MTA.
And they're also doing a drawing for a free $50 starter kit with lots of goodies in it. All you got to do is enter your email address. No purchase necessary. Just go to thrivemarket.com/MTA. And we'd also like to thank Health IQ for sponsoring this episode and being good friends of the MTA podcast. When it comes to life insurance, you got to check out Health IQ. They offer lower life insurance rates for health-minded people like runners. In fact, they have the only life insurance designed specifically for runners, because a lot of people don't know that because of your healthy lifestyle, you should be able to qualify for a better rate.
That's right. Marathon runners have a 29% lower risk of mortality and a 50% lower risk of heart disease, which is great news. But many runners don't realize that they can get lower rates due to their healthy lifestyle. And so that's where Health IQ comes to the rescue. Because they are a data and science-driven company, they use that data on the health benefits of running to negotiate lower rates on life insurance with A-plus insurance carriers.
And they also minimize the penalty for adverse family health history if you are otherwise healthy. Because they do realize that, you know, you could be a healthy, active person, but not necessarily come from, you know, a long line of healthy, active people.
You're not penalized for things that are out of your control.
Just head over to healthiq.com/MTA to get a free rate quote and take one of their famous quizzes like the marathon quiz, which we help design. See what they can do for you. That's healthiq.com/MTA. Well, now it's time for this episode's quick tip. And to go along with the theme of race day and being ready for race day, Angie, you found a great question sent in by a listener about race day nerves.
Yeah, that's right. This email comes from Eli, and he said, I really enjoyed the latest recap of the Munich Marathon.
Thank you, Eli.
I completed my first marathon, Chicago, last weekend. I was thrilled to complete the marathon with a smile, but my performance was not nearly as good as my training runs leading up to race day. As I analyzed my data, I noticed that my heart rate was 15 to 20 beats per minute higher than the same pace in training runs, and that started from the first mile. My resting heart rate and recovery runs have been back to normal since, so I'm guessing that it could be attributed to nerves and excitement. Are there strategies to make race day feel more like a regular run?
Two things I'd like to say, Angie, before I let you take it away. First, he finished with a smile on his face. That's the same way that you finish every marathon.
I don't know. Actually, I was looking at the finish line pictures of the recent marathon I did, and they got this horrible one of me like grimacing. I thought I was smiling. Uh-oh. Maybe I stopped smiling at that point.
You're on your way to smiling.
I was going to smile again.
And here is yet another email from someone that had a tough time at Chicago this year. So folks, if you had a tough time, you're not alone.
That's right.
So what do you got for us, Angie? How does one account for a difference in heart rate on race day versus a training run and how you deal with something like this?
Yeah, it's actually very common. Many, many runners, I would say most in fact, find that they notice a higher heart rate during races as opposed to their training runs. And this can lead to pacing challenges and even more fatigue later in the race because your body is having to work harder. Like Eli alluded to, I think much of this phenomenon is due to higher anxiety levels going into the race. You know, there are things like subpar sleep the night before, often getting up extra early, all the navigating of pre-race logistics, getting to the starting line, sometimes too much caffeine, all the crowds of people, you know, you may be worrying about your performance. And then there's just that generalized excitement in the starting corrals, you know, often music meant to pump you up and there's other people milling around nervously. All those things can account for the body feeling more tense and high strung than normal. And another factor, like we've talked about before, is that a higher heart rate can happen during warmer running conditions, which frequently the Chicago Marathon ends up being a warmer race.
They had one year when someone died.
Well, they actually cut the race short, you know, at a certain point when
and
it got
so hot.
They
ran out of water.
Yeah, so Chicago is not, even though it's a fast, supposedly flat course, it can get really warm. And then, of course, there's all the crowds of people, which navigating that can be a challenge. So
probably not as hard as New York City.
Right, but it's cooler in New York City, so.
I remember it was relatively easy for us to get to the starting line. We just jumped on the train from our hotel. We were staying out by the Midway Airport because the rates were a lot cheaper. And then we just rode the train in and waited around. There were plenty of porta potties, I remember, for the Chicago Marathon.
Yeah, so it depends on where you stay, what kind of logistics you have race morning. And of course, I insisted we get there before the crack of dawn, so we were plenty early.
And usually, like, when Angie and I go to a big city race, we will practice getting from our hotel to the starting line the day before, so there's like no guesswork involved. We'll think about where we're going to park, what's our approach, because we don't want to figure that out on race day.
Exactly. And, you know, some runners end up finding that big city races simply add too much stress to their experience, and they prefer smaller to mid-sized marathons. So, you know, it just depends on the type of person you are. Some people thrive on the big city events. Some people find that it's more stressful for them. There's often easier logistics and just fewer numbers of people to navigate, you know, when you're in a smaller to mid-sized race. So, you know, kind of think about that if it's a goal race, what you really want out of it. To the point of making race day more like a training run, most of us tend to develop a long run routine during training, so it's easier to settle in during those miles and have lower stress levels, you know, especially if you run from home or you do a familiar route. But as you do run more marathons, your body should start to settle down a bit on race day. Although I think everyone does have some nerves to a certain degree, you know, whether it's like excitement nerves or I'm not sure I can do this nerves.
Yeah.
There's that whole spectrum going on.
Definitely.
So one tip to developing a calmer mind and body is to work on positive and calming mantras that you can start doing before your long runs and then repeat before the race. So the more familiarity that you build in to your routine, the better. So if you have calming mantras that you can tell yourself before your long runs and before your races, the better off you're going to be. Some runners find that doing meditation on race morning helps their physiological and mental state. And I'm a person who meditates every day. So I meditated the morning before my last race, and I think it helped me navigate the pre-race logistics, which I always find the most stressful, even easier. Other people find that playing a calming music playlist before each long run and then before the marathon can keep their mind and body in a calm state. So try to save those hard-driving, energetic songs for maybe later in the race if you listen to music during your experience. Because in the beginning, you don't want your heart rate too high. You don't want to be too pumped up going into the race. Now, often races are playing music over speakers, and it's not classical music. It's, you know, like,
oh, that would be terrible.
Thunderstruck or something that, you know, gets you revved up.
Yeah, you got to have high energy music at the start of a race. I mean, definitely. I mean, it wouldn't be the same without that.
Right. But that also leads to higher anxiety levels and a more stimulated body, which your heart rate.
But don't you think it eventually calms down, like after you settle in, like around mile 3 or 4?
It depends. I mean, if your heart rate is too fast going out of the gate and then you don't hold yourself back sometimes, then you can start off at way too fast of a pace. Your heart rate gets high and you never really are able to reel it back during the marathon. So, you know, you kind of have to be careful in those early miles. Another important thing is familiarity. So sticking as close as you can to your sleeping and eating routines, along with laying out all your gear, everything that you'll need for the race the night before, because I don't know about other people, but my brain is kind of half off, you know, in the morning, especially before a race, you kind of feel like a little bit scattered. So I actually, at this last marathon I was at, there were several people, they're in the crowd, like trying to get their bib pinned onto their shirt, you know, and they're like, it's crooked, or someone had pinned on their friend's bib. It was like, okay. Things like that can cause unneeded stress close up to the race.
Wow, that's bad. As nonchalant as I like to be, I've never pinned my race bib on while I was standing there.
That's right.
In the corral.
Also, using well-tested race clothing, shoes, and fuels is important. You know, we always say, do nothing new on race day. Many runners have lucky gear or routines that give them added confidence, whether it's putting on a certain sock and shoe before the other, or like my lucky marathon hat, or whatever people have. Those kind of things can help keep you calmer. And I also find that building an extra time to get to the race decreases my stress level. So, you know, I know Trevor doesn't agree. But for me, the thought of being late or missing something just, you know, sends my mind into orbit. So that's not a good thing. So build an extra time if you can. And then when you're in the corral, just try to focus on your positive mantras, breathe deeply, and don't think too far ahead. You know, you really can't control how the race is going to go. You can only control one step at a time. And so keep things as calm as possible and have confidence that you're going to run as strong as you can and do your very best.
That's right. So I hope that helps. There you have it, folks. Just understand the nature of it, that races are going to be times where there's going to be anxiety. And it's just something that all runners are going to deal with. But hopefully these tips will help you mitigate that a little bit. So thank you again, Eli, for the question. And good luck to everyone out there running a race this fall. I guess that's one good thing about the MTA virtual half is that there shouldn't be any pre-race anxieties, because you just
right.
Get up and go out and run whenever you feel like it. You know, if your schedule allows, and you won't have to worry about standing in a porta potty line or getting there on time, right?
That's right.
You don't even have to pin a bib to your shirt because you don't have a bib. Well, if you'd like to get more tips on marathon training and more helpful resources, podcast episodes, training plans, etc., head over to marathontrainingacademy.com, our fabulous website. Some of you have never been there. You should go there and check it out. It's pretty cool. I built it with my bare hands. There's something going on there all the time. We are posting stuff and sharing stuff. Of course, we'd love to have you connect with us on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. Until next time, be safe, everyone. And remember, you do have what it takes to run a marathon and change your life. Run on my